like to thank you for having me here and giving me the opportunity to present this work. So I will be talking indeed about N equal 1 quantum field theories in four dimensions and how one can build them starting from six dimension or 1,0 theories. So main part of the talk, most I'm going to tell you, is based on this paper with Kumrun Waffa and Gabi Tsafrir, and also a little bit, I will tell you a little bit about results reported in this paper. And all the results that I'm going to tell you about here are heavily based on a paper we wrote with David a couple of years ago, which was a work which was actually initiated when I visited the perimeter last time 3 years ago, and David told me about some of his ideas, and then basically all these results started from that visit. So another thing, I'm severely jet-lagged, so if I start talking in foreign languages of not making sense, please let me know. Okay. So let me start from motivation, about at least for me, to try and answer the questions we are going to ask. So what motivates this work is to understand field theories in different dimensions, in particular quantum field theories in four dimensions. So we know a lot about fantastic properties these quantum field theories have, such as dualities and other properties, some very surprising facts about these theories that we accumulated during the last decades. So in recent years, there is a tendency, a push, progress made towards understanding these fantastic properties by realizing these quantum field theories in four dimensions and in lower dimensions as coming from some higher dimensional setup. So you start from a setup with more degrees of freedom, you get rid of some of the degrees of freedom in various ways, and there are equivalent ways for getting rid of degrees of freedom, which lead, for example, to dualities and so on. So an example of such a construction is to start from six dimensions and to go to four dimensions. We will be interested in theories with some supersymmetry, so we will be starting from in six dimensions with a theory which has some supersymmetry, 1,0 supersymmetry in general, and then we go down to four dimensions by compactifying on a Riemann surface. So there is a choice of a six-dimensional theory that we need to make, and there is a choice of compactification that we need to make. The choice of a six-dimensional theory relevant for this talk will be just an NM5 brains probing an AK minus one singularity. But in principle, you could choose any other six-dimensional theory that you like. Okay? Some of the results, general things that I'm going to say will should go through, but we will specialize to this particular case. So you choose some six-dimensional theory, and then you have to choose some details of the compactification. So these details are encoded in the choice of the geometry of the Riemann surface, and then the six-dimensional theory has some global symmetries, and we will see that you also have a choice to turn on background vector fields for this for those flavor symmetries. So in the end, you obtain a large class of theories in four dimensions. Okay. So they are labeled by the choice of the six-dimensional theories and by choices you made upon compactifications. Okay, so this is a huge class of theories, and we will try to understand what these theories are. Are they related to things that we know? Do they satisfy any dualities and so on? Okay, but in principle, I want to stress that in this way, you can obtain a huge variety of quantum field theories, most of which are not known, at least not obviously known by now to humanity, okay, as we will discuss. Okay, the case, so we will specialize mostly to this case, and the case of K equals one is well studied. It started with the work of Davide, and then when you start from 2,0 theories and no singularity, and then it was generalized to N equal one cases, still no singularity, but some more general constructions, which will relate to what we're going to be talking about. And having less supersymmetry. So the goal today will be to crank up K and to try to understand what type of quantum field theories you get in four dimensions and what can we say about them. Okay, so there are two ways to try to address this problem. Okay, there is a six-dimensional route. So there is this starting point from which we start in six dimensions. And it turns out that we can tell a lot about these four-dimensional theories that we're after just by studying very, very general properties of the six-dimensional theory. For example, we can predict what are the anomalies, what are the Hooft anomalies of the four-dimensional theory. Just by specifying the six-dimensional theory and details of the compactification, we can predict anomalies. We can predict other general properties, such as, for example, the dimension of the conformal manifold, the global symmetry of the theory, and so on. So the arguments which go into these considerations are very general and very robust. You don't need to know what the field theory is. You start from six dimensions. You never mention the details of quantum field theory in four dimensions, but you argue that quantum field theories with such and such properties should exist. Then there is another approach, four-dimensional approach, where you actually want to understand what are these quantum field theories having these properties. And here, regretfully, from our understanding of the simpler k equal 1 case, we should expect that most of the theories that one obtains in such a way don't have a nice description in terms of Lagrangians. At least we don't know of such description right now. So here what one can do, one can try to find a point in this space of theories, in this huge space of theories, where one can identify a connection between six dimensions and four dimensions and start building a map between different compactifications and quantum field theories in four dimensions. So we will follow both of these approaches today. So we will first discuss some general predictions from six dimensions. And then we will try to find a nice corner in the field space, in the theory of in the space of field theories in four dimensions, and try to build understanding of what type of quantum field theories one gets by these compactifications. So this is a picture I want you to have in mind. So you're either a six-dimensional person for whom everything looks alike. Whether you have Lagrangians or some more exotic beasts, everything looks the same. You just predict the general properties, and you are very happy. Or you are a four-dimensional person who is stuck in some corner that he understands, and we will try to make our way into some more exotic places in the landscape of quantum field theories in four dimensions. Okay, so this is our plan. So we will start from reviewing general expectations about four-dimensional theory starting from six dimensions. We will concentrate on a very special case about which it will turn out we can say a lot. And this is the case of 2M5 brains probing Z2 singularity. And here we will also specialize to genus higher than one. This is not absolutely necessary, but most of the results, the concrete results I will tell you, are for genus greater or equal than 2. So after discussing the general predictions from six dimensions, we will discuss what are the field theories in this case. And we will basically be able to identify and study all theories in this class. And although not all of these theories are Lagrangian in the usual sense, and we will discuss in what sense they are not Lagrangian. Okay? So we will encounter new beasts in these constructions, but they will be not dinosaurs. They will be some milder creatures. I don't know, horses with horns. Some things that we should not be too scared about. Okay, and finally, we will discuss another set of examples where we will specialize to genus 1, but have n and k general. So general number of M5 brains probing ZK singularity. And in this case, with particular choices of data upon compactification, all the theories are Lagrangian. Okay, they are just story quivers. And although they are usual and people have studied them a lot, we will be able to say something mildly new about them. Again, something new and non-trivial based on the fact that these theories arise from compactifications in six dimensions. Okay, so this is our plan. So let me begin. So first of all, we will talk about general predictions about four-dimensional theories starting from six dimensions. So there are very simple, rudimentary facts about six dimensions that we will need to know. And the facts that I list on next several slides, more or less, are the facts that I personally know about six dimensions. So you don't need to know much. So first of all, as I mentioned, we need to have we start from some theory in six dimensions. Okay? It is important to know that there are a lot of quantum field theories, conformal field theories in six dimensions. There is a huge variety of them, and usually, typically, these quantum field theories with supersymmetry have some symmetry group G. Okay. In our case, when we specialize to NM5 brains probing a ZK singularity, this G takes the following values. So for general N and K, the symmetry is SUK times SUK times U1. And then as you specialize N and K, the group can enhance. You have some non-abelian enhancement. And in particular, for N equals 2 and K equals 2, the group, the symmetry group of the six-dimensional theory we start with is SO7. And this will be the case we will discuss in most detail. In some sense, you can think that the fact that this group enhances here, you have this maximal enhancement, should make things a little bit more degenerate. But as we will see, it makes the story actually a bit richer in some sense than the general case. Okay, so first of all, we start from some theory in six dimensions. And we note that this theory has some flavor symmetry. Next, we want to compactify this theory from six dimensions down to four dimensions. So there is a choice of Riemann surface that we need to take. So most of what I'm going to say will be about closed Riemann surfaces with no punctures. If you add punctures, it adds a huge layer of complications, some of which we understand and some of which we don't understand. So as much as I can, I will avoid the complications related to punctures, and I will only discuss closed Riemann surfaces. I won't be able to do tell you the story without punctures, but as much as I can, I will ignore them. Now, the usual story then follows. To preserve some supersymmetry, we twist the six-dimensional theory when we put it on the Riemann surface. And in the end, typically, we get an N equal 1 supersymmetric quantum field theory in four dimensions. Now, since we have some global symmetry in six dimensions, we can turn on some background vector fields for this global symmetry, which is consistent with supersymmetry and so on. For example, we can turn on flat bundles, some holonomies around the cycles of the Riemann surface. These are continuous parameters. So in the end of the day, when we take the six-dimensional theory on a Riemann surface, we obtain some four-dimensional theories. And then these choices of background vector fields will correspond to continuous parameters of the field theory in four dimensions. We can also turn on flux for abelian subgroup of the symmetry group in six dimensions. And this will give you some discrete parameters. The flux has to be quantized, so in appropriate quantization, you will have some vector of integers specifying the flux. Okay? And different choices of flux will give you different theories in four dimensions. Okay. So when we turn on the flux for this global symmetry, we actually explicitly break the flavor symmetry. Okay? We specify some background value for vector fields, we explicitly break the global symmetry, and we break it to the commutant, basically, of this flux in the group G. And we will call that group G max. Okay? And this G max will be the symmetry of the theory in four dimensions. Okay? So you start from G, then you turn on some fluxes, and then you have some smaller symmetry G max in four dimensions. Now, the flat bundles that we talked about, the holonomies around the cycles of the Riemann surface, are for this a smaller group Gmax. And again, the moduli space of these flat Gmax bundles will become some parameters in four-dimensional theory, which typically are called couplings. Okay, so this is a list of predictions, very general predictions that you can make just following the previous slide. So we have compactifications which are labeled by the choice of six-dimensional theory. Then we choose a Riemann surface and choose fluxes for global symmetries. These are discrete choices, the fluxes and the genus, and if you have punctures and so on, these are discrete choices which will give you a discrete set of theories in four dimensions. then these theories in four dimensions will have some global symmetry, some flavor symmetry, which is the symmetry which survives the compactification, which we denote Gmax. So this should be the symmetry of the four-dimensional theory. Then the four-dimensional theory should have some space of couplings. So there is a geometric space of couplings, the space of complex structure moduli. This is given by 3G minus 3 if you don't have punctures. And then there is this formula for the flat connections for the group Gmax. Okay, so there are a lot of couplings that the theory can have, and the number of couplings, as you note, depends on the group Gmax. Okay, depending on what group survives, the larger the group surviving, the more couplings you have. Okay. Moreover, in addition to this kind of very simple predictions, you can actually also compute anomalies. Basically, all the Hooft anomalies of the theories in four dimensions. You start, if you know the eight-form anomaly polynomial of the theory in six dimensions, you can integrate it over a Riemann surface and obtain the anomaly polynomial for the four-dimensional theory. So you can predict anomalies. So these are very, very simple, robust predictions that we can make starting from six dimensions. And here is an example, a very particular example of 2M5 brains probing Z2 singularity. Okay. So as I mentioned, the group is SO7. It's a rank 3 group. So we have 3 U1s which we can embed in this SO7. And we can specialize a vector of 3 integers. So properly normal, like in proper normalization, there will be integers. So if we don't turn on any flux, we expect the theory in four dimensions to have SO7 symmetry. If we turn on a generic flux, we break the group completely to the Cartan, to the 3 U1s. And then there is a zoo of possibilities in between. Okay? And you can have SU3 group, SO5, 2 SU2s, and so on. Okay? All these choices will correspond to different quantum field theories in four dimensions. They will have different flavor symmetry. And because of this relation between symmetry and the number of couplings, they will have different number of exactly marginal parameters in four dimensions. So there is a zoo of possibilities that you can obtain in four dimensions, even if you start from a simple case such as 2M5 brains probing a Z2 singularity. On top of these choices, of course, you have also the choice of a genus of a Riemann surface and so on and so on. Okay? So there are a lot of theories that you can obtain by this compactification. And you can compute anomalies, as I mentioned. And here is an example of what type of anomalies you will get. For example, if you take a closed Riemann surface, genus G Riemann surface, and don't turn on any fluxes, so you should obtain a theory which has SO7 symmetry in four dimensions. And you can compute, for example, A and C anomalies. And they are given by this expression. You can take a flux which breaks the group to SO5 times U1. And is correlated with Euler character of the Riemann surface. This is important. So it's not an arbitrary number here. Arbitrary number would break the group to SO5 times U1, but the anomalies would be much more complicated. So for a very particular choice, you get such anomalies. Note that usually you think that rational anomalies should correspond to n equals 2, but these theories are not n equals 2, they're n equals 1. And then for more general choices of fluxes, you get other, you can compute the anomalies and you get typically ugly numbers, but you can compute them explicitly. Okay? In some sense, this is this SO7, for people who know the k equal 1 case well, this kind of type of zero flux compactifications are analogous to what is called Sicilian theories, n equal 1 class S theories, and these are this type of flux is analogous to what gives you n equal 2 supersymmetry in class S theories. Okay, so these are very concrete computations that you can perform. There is a mixing. You have a U1 symmetry, and you can mix it with the R symmetry, and you need to do a maximization and you have some roots, and in general, you can have very complicated equations, and there are some algebraic equations you need to solve, and it will be a complete mess. But you can perform the computation.
Would there be an unsupersymmetry in the example where you are rational
sample theory? No, it will be always n equal 1 in our case.
How do you know that?
You know that because, for example, you can compute the index, And the index is not compatible with n equal to supersymmetry. So for example, when you have n equal to supersymmetry, the number of the relevant operators that you should see are the moment maps. So they should be in the adjoint representation of the group, of the flavor symmetry group. And you don't see them. Next, yeah. So it's just not compatible with n equals 2. It's not surprising. Again, even for k equals 1 cases, for Sicilian theories, the ones that UG and friends studied for class S, anomalies are rational, but the theories are n equal 1. So it's very analogous. OK, so this is the story from six dimensions. And now you can ask, OK, these are general predictions. What are the field theories which have these properties? Can we construct the field theories in four dimensions which have exactly these properties, exactly these symmetries, these numbers of couplings, anomalies, and so on? Okay? And here we should be skeptical that we can do anything, okay? Because already in the case of k equals 1, no orbifold, typically we get some very strongly coupled theories from which we don't know, we don't know usual useful Lagrangians, and we cannot directly say anything from field theory. Okay? However, as we will see, for the special case of Z2 orbifold and 2M5 brains, we will be able to completely specify what are the field theories. Now, the derivation of this result is not straightforward. It's extremely ugly, and I'm not sure it's very telling. Okay, so what I will do, I will first give you the result, what are the field theories. At least in particular case, and the final result, as usually happens, as often happens, is much simpler than the derivation. Okay, so I will state the results, and we will discuss them, and then I will allude to how one derives these results. I will be a bit cryptic about it. Okay, so here comes a point where we cannot ignore the existence of punctures anymore. And the reason is that a very useful way to construct these field theories in four dimensions is by first telling you what are the field theories corresponding to compactifications of three punctured spheres. Okay, the moment I tell you what are the theories corresponding to compactifications of three punctured spheres, we can glue these punctured spheres together to form closed Riemann surfaces geometrically. And in field theory, this gluing corresponds to gauging some symmetries associated with punctures. So what are the symmetries associated to the punctures is heavily dependent on what the six-dimensional theory you chose, what type of compactification you chose, and so on. So for us, it will be the only thing you need to remember that in this class of theories of NM5 brains probing AK minus one singularity, the symmetry associated with certain type of punctures is SUN to the K. There are a lot of complications with punctures. For example, typically when you have punctures, the group of symmetries is broken from Gmax to some subgroup. So there are some complications that I'm not going to discuss. But what we will do, I will tell you what the trinions are in certain cases. And they will turn out to be completely Lagrangian nice trinions. And then from them, we will construct more complicated theories. Okay? So here is our first example. So I claim that the theory described on this slide describes a trinion when you don't have any flux for the global symmetry in six dimensions. So the symmetry group for closed Riemann surfaces built from these trinions should be SO7. And this theory is very simple, and it is just two copies of SU2 gauge theory glued together through superpotential interactions. Okay? There are quartic interactions gluing these two gauge theories. And the way I have drawn this theory on like the quiver theory, you can see explicitly that there are two copies of SU2 squared symmetry. There are also a bunch of abelian symmetries floating around. An important thing for us is that at some point on the conformal manifold of this theory, one obtains actually not just these two copies of SU2 squared symmetry, but three copies of SU2 squared symmetry. In fact, as discussed by Tudor and Davide here, the global symmetry of this theory is E7, okay, at some point on the conformal manifold. The E7 will not play any role for us, but it will be important that E7 has this, a lot of SU2 factors which appear symmetrically. Okay? So remember that we want to associate this theory to a sphere with three maximal punctures. We're in a case where we have two M5 frames probing Z2 singularity. So we need a group which corresponds to a puncture to be SU2 squared. So we have two SU2 squares, which we can see with our eyes in this quiver, and we have some other SU2 square appearing somewhere on the conformal manifold. Okay? And the way to see it, for example, is to look on the supersymmetric partition functions and see that there is enhancement of symmetry and so on. So what we claim that if we tune our coupling to this point where symmetry enhances to three copies of SU2 squared, then this is a trinion for our SO7 compactifications. Okay, so it's completely Lagrangian theory. You start from a Lagrangian, you just need to tune the coupling to special value when a symmetry enhances. Okay. So how do we know that this is correct? Okay, we can now start building theories corresponding to closed Riemann surfaces for this trinion. If we glue things, like we can start gluing these trinions together to form spheres with punctures or tori with punctures. If we do this thing, we don't do anything funny. We always gauge only two symmetries corresponding to maximal punctures, which we can explicitly see in our field theory description. However, if we will now try to build higher genus Riemann surfaces, we will necessarily gauge some symmetry which we don't see in the Lagrangian, okay? So this is in this small sense, these theories are not Lagrangian, okay? You need to tune the coupling to strong coupling, then some symmetry enhances, and you gauge that symmetry, okay? So this is not very useful description if you want to compute, I don't know, correlation functions or things like that, but if you are to compute things which do not depend on the values of coupling, such as anomalies, indices, and so on, this is still a useful description of the theory to have. So you can have this description of the theory using the trinion, and you can compute anomalies. And they match exactly what we have computed from six dimensions. Okay? It's a completely different computation. Here we have field theory. We compute the anomalies in field theory. There we had an integration of some anomaly polynomial of 1,0 theory on a Riemann surface, but the result is the same. When you glue things together and you look at the supersymmetric partition functions, for example, you can see that these partition functions are consistent with the symmetry being SO7. Basically, you see everything falling in SO7 representations, as we expect. This theory has no SO7 at all. There is no SO7. Nothing near to SO7. There are some abelian factors and so on. It's not clear from this that SO7 should appear. But when you glue things together, you get SO7, as we want from six dimensions. Another check is that, for example, from the index, you can extract the number of exactly marginal deformations of couplings. And you can extract the dimension of the conformal manifold. You compute it. You look at the index, and you see that the number of couplings is 3g minus 3, plus g minus 1 times 21, where 21 is the dimension of the adjoint of SO7. So again, there was a geometric formula for the number of couplings that we mentioned, and we exactly find it for these models. So these trinions meet all our expectations. Field theories computed from these trinions meet all our expectations about compactifications of theories of two M5 brains probing Z2 singularity with no flux. Yes?
If you try to get the dimension of a conformal manifold by ideally using the Lagrangian description and one loop exactness for the Lagrangian couplings, what do you find for the dimension?
This is what you would find. These are all the, when I say the index, you can do some other computations. They're all equivalent.
Okay, you might have gotten rid of the naive one loop.
So I don't know how to think about one loop computation here, like as a one loop computation, because you know you need to tune somewhere to strong coupling. I don't know how to think about that, but you can think about it very very algebraically. Like what are the symmetries? What are the marginal operators? Which symmetries they are breaking? And then what you that's what you.
I don't think would be since the data function is saturated at one loop. Why would it depend whether you have strong coupling or not?
No, I agree with that. So that's why I'm saying it should be the same computation.
But saying that it is a one-loop computation, I will
can
not.
You do it with the weak coupling.
That's fine.
Yes. Yeah,
exactly. But the theory is not well-defined in weak coupling, you see, because you gauge some symmetry which is not there at weak coupling. So saying that you do it in weak coupling, it's okay. It's equivalent to other computations that you can do to fix the dimension of the conformal manifold. So algebraically, it will be the same. Say computing what are the marginal operators, what are the symmetry they break, and so on, and extracting from that the dimension of the conformal manifold. It's the same computation, but saying that you have a one-loop computation here.
Suppose you do it naively.
Yes.
Ignoring this issue. So of course, these issues are there.
Yeah, and
so
you will
get
this
the same answer.
Yeah, you should get the same answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is one example, okay, of a theory. Now you can ask, what about other examples? So this is another thing that we can, where the answer is simple. These are these compactifications which break, you turn some flux, which breaks SO7 down to SO5 times U1, but the flux is correlated with the Euler character, like it's 2G minus 2 in proper normalization. And the statement is that the field theory is just this, it's very, very similar, you just add this by fundamental fields. And again, the story just goes through. There you can see two copies of SU2 squared. Somewhere on the conformal manifold, you get another SU2 squared. And at that point of the conformal manifold, that's the point which corresponds to the trim. You can take this quantum field theory and compute anomalies and so on, anything you can compute, which doesn't depend on the coupling. You get concrete numbers, and they match exactly what you predict from six dimensions. So again, anomalies, the symmetry that you see is SO5 times U1. The dimension of the conformal manifold is consistent with SO5 times U1. Everything is consistent with predictions from six dimensions. And again, I stress that these theories are non-Lagrangian, only in the sense that you need to tune, you take some Lagrangian, you tune the coupling to some point where symmetry enhances, and you gauge this enhanced symmetry at that point.
So anomalies, you're computing them again, and they
anomalies are just you're just counting the fermions, and it doesn't depend on where you are, so it doesn't depend on the couplings, and so you can compute in the Lagrange. In that sense, again, you can think of it as a one-loop computation, and so. Okay. So these are some results, and you can wonder how one gets them and how one generalizes these results to other cases. So how one could have guessed this result. So the point is again that we didn't guess these results; they came out of a very nonlinear computation, which I'm now going to a little bit describe. Okay, so. What one needs to do is, as we talked in the beginning, one needs to find some starting point in the space of quantum field theories in four dimensions, which one can guess or conjecture corresponds to some compactification of six-dimensional theory. So the theories we are considering are ZK orbifolds of M5 brains probing some ZK singularity. So, for example, we know when k equals 1, when we don't have an orbifold, that when we compactify the theory on a sphere with what is called two maximal punctures and one minimal puncture, Davide has told us that you get some collection of free hypermultiples. So a naive guess would be just to take an orbifold of this free field. So you will obtain some collection of free chiral fields. And the symmetry will be SUN to the k times SUN to the k. There will be some special U1. Which we would associate to a minimal puncture and a bunch of other U1s, which are the Cartans of this global symmetry in six dimensions. So it's a guess, it's an educated guess for a starting point in six dimensions, sorry, in four dimensions, where we understand that this should come from some compactifications from six dimensions. Then the moment we make this guess, we can start building more complicated theories. Okay? For example, we can start gluing these things together along the maximal punctures by gauging this SUN to the K symmetries. And by doing so, we will obtain theories which should correspond to a sphere with two maximal punctures and a bunch of minimal punctures. Okay? So
we obtain more complicated theories. Now, these theories have natural operators, operators which I call mesons here, which are these operators, which are charged only under one maximal puncture symmetry, not under the others, and not under the U1 symmetry here. There are baryonic operators, which are only charged under this U1 and not charged under this symmetry. When you have these operators, you can study vacuum expectation values for these operators. And again, from our understanding of how things work in class S when k equals 1, this type of flows should do something to punctures. If you give valves to baryonic operators, you should get rid of the minimal puncture. You give a valve to an operator charged under some symmetry, so you break that symmetry disappears. So naively, you should get a theory which should correspond to compactification to a Riemann surface without a puncture. And similarly, giving valves to mesons will give you some punctures, where SUN to the K is broken to some subgroup. So there is a whole zoo of possibilities that you can get. Okay. An important thing here is that if you study these flows, for example, you try to give valves to baryons and remove punctures, you find out that unlike the class S story, when k is bigger than 1, the theory that you obtain by giving valves to baryons is not equivalent to a theory you would build just by removing a minimal puncture, a U1 puncture. It's just not. These are Lagrangian theories. You can study everything, and you don't find it. So there has to be some other kind of description in addition to Riemann surface that describes these theories. And the natural candidate is the flux that we discussed. The theories are labeled by the data of the Riemann surfaces and the flux. So the conjecture again is that when you close a puncture by giving valves to baryons, in the compactification you shift a value of fluxes. And by studying kind of consistency conditions of what type of fluxes you need to turn on, you can figure out what is the natural prescription to this shift of the fluxes that you can have. Another thing that I want to stress, because it will be important in what follows, again, just by studying these flows and consistency condition on different flows, you figure out that when you close a puncture by giving a valve, you should not just give a valve to some operator. You need to flip some other operators. Flipping means you introduce some chiral field, singlet gauge, singlet chiral field, and couple it to some gauge invariant operator. So typically, you will introduce a lot of chiral fields when you close punctures. Okay? So it's a bit heavy on details, but I want just to give you a taste of what the procedure is and why I did not start from it, but I told you the result. So these are the games you can play. Okay? These are the simple games you can play. Now, the moment you know how to construct these theories which correspond to spheres with a lot of minimal punctures and a couple of maximal punctures, you can study dualities, for example. Okay, so the gluing two free trinions together, you would obtain a theory corresponding to two maximal punctures and two minimal punctures, a sphere with them. And naturally, you would associate to this duality frame where you gauge a symmetry associated to maximal puncture. But then you can ask yourself, what happens if you bring two minimal punctures together? Analogous to a question which Argyris and Seiberg should have asked if they knew about the Riemann surface picture. Of course, they didn't know, and they asked it in a different way. But this is the way we would ask it now. Okay? What is the duality frame? What are the building blocks in this duality frame, where two maximal punctures sit together? And you can try to figure out an answer to this question, for example, by first closing this maximal puncture down to a minimal one. And then because you have this geometric picture, this is a completely Lagrangian description. You can figure out what that flow will do. And for example, in our case of n equals 2 and k equals 2, you find that if you close this puncture down to U1, you Higgs SU2 squared gauge symmetry down to SU2, and you have very particular collection of chiral fields. So you know exactly what happens here. You know if there is a duality frame, which you can geometrically understand in this way,
It should be something that you don't know, some trinion with three maximal punctures that you don't know, coupled through SU2 gauging to something you know, some collection of chiral fields that you can deduce. Okay? And this theory will have a very particular fluxes that you can compute from consistency conditions, and it will be some trinion, which we call TA plus. It's not one of the trinions that we discussed till now. It's a more complicated one. Okay. So now from this duality, it so happens that you can deduce all the properties you want about these trinions, like anomalies, symmetries, and so on. And this procedure generalizes. We can extract several trinions by this procedure, which we call TA plus, plus minus, TB plus minus. They correspond to different values of fluxes. Again, if you normalize things in some way, this will be integers, but that's a convenient way to normalize things. And it so happens, and I will soon tell why, that they correspond to these types of compactification. Again, this can be read also from the fluxes, to what is the symmetry which is preserved by these fluxes. And then you can compute properties of other theories with other types of fluxes by combining these theories together and flowing, performing RG flows. So this is a very systematic way to construct predictions. These theories are rather complicated. They are much more complicated than the theories we discussed. But now, the moment you have built these Lego blocks, these building blocks, you can combine them together, glue them together to construct theories with arbitrary fluxes. Okay, Riemann surfaces, closed Riemann surfaces, which correspond to arbitrary fluxes. A kind of a bit experimental fact is that when you combine theories which correspond to compactifications with some values of flux, the theory which you obtain corresponds to a flux being just a sum of the ingredients. Okay? So for example, if you take these plus and minus trinions that you can derive, you obtain a compactification which has no flux, and you have SO7 symmetry. Again, you can compute anomalies, symmetries, and so on. Everything is consistent. There are duality considerations. For example, instead of TA trinions, we could use here TB trinions, which are different. And still, the fluxes are the same, the symmetry is the same, so the theory should be the same. Although the building blocks are different, the final result is the same. You can combine things in different ways to obtain different values of fluxes, which should give you different values of symmetries, different conformal manifold, different anomalies, and everything goes through, okay, rather non-trivially. Okay, so again, I stress it's a very large network of checks on these conjectures. We make this basically one conjecture in the beginning, and then we followed a lot of considerations, a lot of consistency checks, assuming that everything comes from six-dimensional compactifications. At the end, you arrive at some theories, and then you have a huge network of checks that you can perform, and everything passes those checks. And this is a more complicated theory. So I mentioned this SU3 theory, which has SU3 times U1 symmetry, where you turn on these types of flux, and you can build such a theory with some effort with these building blocks. And these theories are, they have some Lagrangian, again, which is not a typical Lagrangian because you have to tune couplings to strong coupling, but you can compute anomalies. It's a very different computation, again, from the six-dimensional computation, but you get the same ugly numbers. And you can do it over and over again for any theory you can construct. And you can compute not just A and C anomaly, but any Tufton. These theories have a lot of symmetries, AU1, SU3, and in general, a lot of symmetries. You can compute all the Tufton anomalies, and they match.
From the dimensional perspective, how do you get the square?
How do you get what?
The square roots.
Again, it's A maximization. You have a Lagrangian with the... Yes, that's right. But there is a mixing. It's a usual story. You have some U1 R symmetry that you guess. Then you can admix any U1 symmetry that you have. And in these cases, you have U1 symmetries. In this case, you have one U1 symmetry. You can admix it to the naive R symmetry to get superconformal R symmetry. You get some quadratic equations. You maximize, and you get square roots. OK. So this is the story for z equals zk with k equals 2 and 2 and 5 brains. So we basically can construct any theory corresponding to compactification. Now, there is another thing we can do. We can study theories compactified on a torus and take general n and general k. Okay, so the way we construct these theories is we take our free trinions, we construct from them a loop, a torus. So it will be a torus with a lot of minimal punctures. And then we close these minimal punctures. Okay? Now, when we close minimal punctures, what it means is that we give vevs to some baryons. Okay? But there are a lot of baryons here. So there is a choice of a baryon you give a vev to when you close a minimal puncture. And you can actually map these choices to different fluxes that you can turn on for this SUK times SUK symmetry that you have in this case. You can show that actually the symmetry here is SUK times SUK times U1, but by following this procedure, you turn on fluxes only for to SUK times to the Cartan of SUK times SUK. So you can map, you can turn on general vevs, which map to general fluxes on a torus. Okay, so, and again, you can compute anomalies, you can compute symmetries, and things match. Okay, one thing that I did not write here and doesn't match is usually on a torus, things become a little bit uglier. For example, the number of marginal deformations doesn't follow our geometric formula that I wrote. That only holds for genus higher than one. There are some complications that even are not well understood in classes, but for higher genus, the number of marginal deformation matches the what we naively would expect, and symmetry should always match. And they indeed match, and the anomalies match. Okay? So this is a general story, and here is an example. Okay? So this is an example of taking k equals 2 and general n. Okay? So we glue two free trinions together to form a torus, and then we have two minimal punctures, and we close them in certain way. And this is completely Lagrangian. You have some flow, and what you obtain is this Klebanov-Witten theory. The only difference from Klebanov-Witten theory, as I stressed, is that when you close punctures, you don't just give vevs to some operators, you also flip some operators. It's a prescription that you can derive, and you have to do that. And also here, you flip the baryonic operators, two of the baryonic operators you can have here, with some free chiral field. Now, for general n, this is highly irrelevant operator. Okay? So in the IR, these fields just decouple and become free. Okay? Nevertheless, they are very important for construction. If you try to match the anomalies with six dimensions, if you ignore these fields, you don't get a match. Okay? One neat thing that you get here in general, so you can compute large n behavior of these anomalies. And if you do it from six-dimensional computation, you get funny scalings with n. For example, the scaling you get is n to the 3/2. And then you wonder, what does it mean? So what it means that when you go to field theory, you see that actually you did not identify the R symmetry correctly. There are a lot of free chiral fields. And then thus there are a lot of abelian symmetries, accidental symmetries in the IR that you should admix. And when you take that into account, everything works. So you need these things to match anomalies with six dimensions. Moreover, when n is equal to 2, this is a relevant deformation. Okay? And so these fields don't decouple in the IR. And in this particular case, when the flavor symmetry with n, when n equals 2, this is the flux which it corresponds to. And here you should get a symmetry which is S of 5 times U1, okay? By general considerations from six dimensions. You don't see this symmetry here in the Lagrangian. You see only SU2 squared times U1. You don't see S of 5 times U1. But when you compute the index, for example, including this singlet operator, this chiral field, you see that the index has SO5. So these fields are absolutely crucial. Okay? So this is a small thing that you might not know about the Klebanov-Witten theory. For n equals 2, if you flip things like that, you get an SO5 symmetry. Okay. So let me, before finishing, let me mention another nice fact about these theories. So we mentioned that you have these theories which have continuous parameters, and then they have discrete parameters. So theories corresponding to different discrete choices correspond to different theories in four dimensions. And you can ask whether these theories are related in any way. Okay? And it turns out that they are related. So taking some general compactification with general flux, typically you get some theory with relevant operators. And you can ask what happens if you turn on those relevant operators. And what happens is that you flow to a conformal manifold with a bigger global symmetry. It's kind of counterintuitive. You start with a smaller symmetry and you end up with a bigger symmetry. And the reason is that on a conformal when you have non-abelian factors of symmetry here, on a general point of the conformal manifold, the non-abelian symmetry is completely broken. Only U1s remain. So you start from this theory, you break some U1s by relevant deformation, you end up on a generic point of a conformal manifold of this theory, but somewhere on that conformal manifold, symmetry enhances to a bigger one. So you have this sequence of flows. In the end, you end up with a theory which has no relevant deformations, okay, no supersymmetric relevant deformation. So the general statement is that the theory with no flux at all has no relevant deformations, no supersymmetric relevant deformation. And this is an observation you can make. Okay, so let me summarize. So what we can do is that we can is the following. We can derive a precise dictionary between field theoretic constructions and six-dimensional construction at, in one case. When we have two M5 brains probing Z2, A1 singularity, and in another case where we have a torus compactification with arbitrary N M5 brains probing AKN singularities. And there are a lot of checks that one can perform, and all of them go through. The theories that you obtain for this, for higher genus cases, are not completely what you would call Lagrangian. Again, the only way that they are non, the only way in which they are not Lagrangian is that you gauge symmetries that you don't see in the Lagrangian. And the construction undergoes a lot of checks. So there are a lot of open questions that you can ask. So the construction that I presented for higher genus only works for n equals 2 and k equals 2. So naturally, you should ask what happens for other n's and for other k's. So a kind of a very bold conjecture would be that for any such cases, you should find some theory which has a Lagrangian, and you tune your coupling to strong coupling and gauge things. So is it true? It's not obvious that it has to be true. Maybe we were just lucky in this particular case. So, but in general, the question remains, is there a field theoretic construction in four dimensions, for general compactifications, which would reproduce the six-dimensional predictions. Another question which I find very interesting is what happens if you compactify to three dimensions? Okay. For class S, when you have k equals 1, when you compactify these theories to three dimensions, you always had Lagrangians. You had mirror symmetries in terms of Lagrangian description. So is there something nice like that happening for these theories? If you compactify them, do all of them have Lagrangian descriptions in three dimensions or not? I don't know. And then, of course, there are these 4D to 2D correspondences that we had when k equals 1, AGT correspondence and the index. And the index goes through in a rather trivial way. It's a more complicated story, but it will be interesting to explore it more here, and if, whether there are any other 4D to the theory relations. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we talked about this V7 theory,
yes.
I think the one you're using is the one that we got for the sandwich.
Yes.
With some 5D theory with two boundary conditions. Some very, very simple 5D theory.
Yes. Some free theory.
Yeah, with the two boundary conditions. Does that come up anywhere?
No. Maybe it should.
Yeah,
but
I'm trying to think. If you take the Z2 singular, you can sort of pull it apart into Telnet centers.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe there was some geometric derivation.
Maybe, I don't know. If the only thing which was important for us is that this theory has this a lot of SU2s.
Yeah.
And day 7 was not important. But,
For example, I don't know, maybe thinking about 5D would help figure out what are the trinions for other case NNs. I don't know. At the moment, this seems to be very special to K equals to NN equals 2. We can try gluing many copies together of many different theories, but it doesn't seem to work. The counting only works here. Basically, you have some minimal punctures and some maximal punctures here. And maximal punctures come with baryons, and maximal come with mesons, and minimal come with baryons. And only when n equals 2 and k equals 2, these baryons and mesons match. And then you can somehow, two minimal punctures become a maximal puncture somewhere on the conformal manifold. And these baryons can be interpreted as mesons. If you take other n's and k's, and things don't.
There's no more questions, let's discuss it.